Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We're going to start today on a crisis situation that's a real crisis situation that we haven't dealt with yet on the show because of so much else that's been going on locally and globally. But we know this is relevant to many of you, and it's the crisis in Haiti, where a gang uprising has successfully ousted the appointed prime minister, Ariel Henry. With so many Haitian Americans in our listening area, we want your take and on why and what to do about it. 212-433-WNYC, and we'll talk to Gary Pierre-Pierre from the Haitian Times in just a second. But by way of background, for those of you who don't have ties to Haiti and haven't been following it, but hear this in the news and think, yeah, well, this is basically right off our shores. We should know what's going on. And the United States is often said to be somewhat responsible for this. As of now, Haitian civilians face widespread acts of random violence and displacement. According to UNICEF, over 362,000 desperate people are internally displaced, and hunger and life-threatening malnutrition are at a record high across the country. Here in the United States, Florida officials announced the interdiction of a boat carrying 25 Haitian migrants, interdiction by law enforcement last week. Florida's governor and former Republican presidential candidate Ron DeSantis threatened to fly Haitian asylum seekers. Where else? Not New York this time, the other place, Martha's Vineyard. Although CBS News reports turmoil in that country has not resulted in a spike in maritime migration, DeSantis's reaction was to just 25 people. President Biden has requested aid be sent to Haiti, but congressional Republicans blocked the flow of $40 million, citing fears that the funds could worsen the situation. A lot of Haitians also think U.S. intervention has worsened the situation there over time. So let's take a closer look at this crisis unfolding in Haiti and with ramifications for the United States, also the role of the United States in creating this pressure cooker, and we'll talk about how this could possibly end and get better. Joining us now is Gary Pierre-Pierre, founder and publisher of the Haitian Times. Gary, always good to have you on the show. Unfortunately, always seems to be around this kind of thing, but welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Pleasure to be here.
And listeners, we are going to open up the phones right away. To those of you with ties to Haiti, what are you hearing from family members, if you have family members there right now? Do you think the United States should be doing something in particular to help combat what's being described as a gang takeover? Would U.S. interference, if that's the right word, cause more harm than good? What do you see as the solution to Haiti's ongoing political and humanitarian crises? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Gary, first, it might seem to Haitians and certainly to non-Haitians who casually consume media coverage that it's just one crisis after another. Today it's this. In 2021, you were on after the assassination of Prime Minister Moïse. We could go way back to the coup against President Aristide, who actually came on the show and he was in exile. Why is there so much political instability for decades in a row?
Brian, one slight correction. Moïse was the president, not the prime minister. I just wanted to make
fair
that
enough.
Point.
Sorry.
No worries. Well, really, Brian, I've been talking to you and other colleagues for over 20 years about Haiti. And whenever we talk about the latest crisis, I think one has to go back to when Haiti got its independence in 1804. Because this was a country that was calling itself a republic, black people calling themselves free men. And so, you know, the United States, where slavery was a major part of its economy, really was threatened by this whole idea of Haiti. France, which was a superpower at the time, lost all of its property, and it forced Haiti to pay a ransom for having an independence. And so Haiti was isolated right there and there. They had no trading partners, and there was infighting and instability started from then. And so this is why some Haitians and some other scholars have said, well, the U.S. and France was responsible. And they, and that cycle, unfortunately, has been continuing and unable to break. And this is where we are right now. I mean, I could talk to you if you go back to Aristide and today, the underlying reason is that we got our independence as a nation and we were isolated from the world. Totally. So, we missed the Industrial Revolution and everything else that went that came with it. And we've been trying to play catch up ever since.
And yet, I think it's fair to say that Haiti is a very fertile island, historically growing crops consumed by the world. But UNICEF reports 1 in 4 children in Haiti suffer from chronic malnutrition. Can you talk about the fertility of the island? Should agriculture be more of a domestic resource there and maybe even an export business more than it is?
Well, yeah, it should. In fact, President Préval in 2004 or so invested heavily in agriculture for Haiti. It was a couple of years before that, I'm sorry. And so what happened, and there was a hurricane, and it destroyed everything. And also, Haiti, it's cheaper to import rice and foodstuff than it is to grow it because of the lack of infrastructure, road to get things around. And so that's why we're food insecure. The other problem also is that the border with the Dominican Republic, where we get many of our goods, has been closed. And the ports are closed, so therefore not much can come in. Right now, people are living with whatever reserve that they have. I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday, and he was not sure how long his supplies would last in terms of food, and the supermarkets are closed. So you have all of these factors playing a role in making the country at large food insecure. One of the things I must say, in fact, when we talk about Haiti, what's happening, and we want to be clear, Brian, that this most of what we're describing is Port-au-Prince. And the problem is that Port-au-Prince is a capital, and it's also the cultural capital and the most important city. And it's been isolated strategically, tactically by the gangs from the rest of the country. So there's nothing coming. There's nothing leaving Port-au-Prince. So Port-au-Prince is isolated completely and overrun by gangs.
When you say gangs, and so much of the media reporting uses that word, what do we mean by gangs? We think of gangs in one context in the New York area, maybe in other contexts nationally. It's different over time in the U.S. context. What do you mean when you say gangs?
These are criminal elements, thugs that have been growing, I would say, since the late 1990s. And they've been collecting and stockpiling military-grade weapons. And before, they used to be shock troopers, if you will, excuse the language, of the political class and the business elite. And the last couple years, they began to go out on their own, basically bypassing the political class and the business class, and started looting and killing and kidnapping for ransom, which has become very lucrative for them. And so these are not, you know, like you said, the gangs that we think of. Think of them more as the warlords and the technicals of yesteryears in Somalia. So that's the situation we have. And then these gangs, criminal gangs, the police are unable to push them back. So the police have always been playing defense and not be able to attack them and pacify them and to make sure that the city, the capital city, can restore some sense of normalcy.
Why does the gang activity lead to a breakdown of the economy generally, though? If one thinks about mafia-type gangs, to use a phrase in the history of the United States, yeah, they took their cuts, but it didn't stop the economy from working overall.
Well, this is a different system, and Haiti's politics is a zero-sum game, and whatever we do, it's just like all for me, nothing for you. So, therefore, the gangs now, they have all the power. It used to be the army of the rich and the political class, if you will, but now they're their own army. They are no rules. They make the rules. They decide what happens. They've imposed taxes and other fines to people living in the neighborhoods throughout the city, and they're acting as a government, although obviously very illegal government. But essentially, they decide what happens. And you have to understand too, Brian, very important, that these gang members, they are marginalized. They've been marginalized all their lives. And these are people who are deeply, deeply angry at Haitian society, that the elite that ruled the country. And so right now, they're really the notion of country and being a community, these things elude them. They've gotten, and really, that's why some people in the U.S., Haitians, I must say, that have a little bit of a sympathy for this situation, although they're not supportive, but they can understand why the situation has gotten to where it is. Mm-hmm. Because we've never seen, I mean, we've been talking about 25 years about Haiti on and off, Brian, but this is the worst it's ever been. This is real. The other things were manufactured by the political class. But this is a total breakdown of society where people are fleeing. There's been images on the internet about helicopters coming in to whisk people out of the country. Well, that's not normal. This is not sort of like the political crisis that we've talked about, or the issues with the Dominican Republic, and then so on and so forth. This is, you know, next level chaos.
And listeners, who has a question or who has a story for Gary Pierre Pierre, editor and publisher of the Haitian Times, 212-433-WNYC, call or text 212-433-9692. Here's a question a listener texted Gary. I've been reading that Haiti's gangs got their marching order from politicians. Could the guest please explain that? Is that true? Would you describe it that way, Gary?
It used to be, yes, absolutely. And this is what I explained, that before they used to work for politicians around election time to sow some violence, some trouble, and so they can intimidate and force each other. And they also work for the private sector. Whenever you have different factors in the private sector fighting among themselves, they'll use the gang to intimidate, kill, if need be, their opponent or the rival. So that's what the gangs have been using. So now what is happening now, the gangs have taken over. They're able to collect the money themselves, so they don't need to get to be a broker for these politicians and these businessmen. So, and the key here is that the police have been politicized. The morale is non-existent. A lot of them have left Haiti. So the force is being reduced. So in that scenario, nothing good happens.
Another listener asks, curious about where the weapons available to the gangs are coming from.
Well, Haiti doesn't produce any. They're coming from Miami, the United States. There are several people who've been found guilty or charged with gun smuggling to Haiti. And so this is one thing that I've been asking, and that we've been saying at the Haitian Times, that the U.S. can play a role in helping that, absolutely. If the U.S. doesn't want to do anything or can't do for political reasons, the Republicans blocking this and that, they can really get the ATF and the DEA to really intervene, make sure that cargoes that are heading to Haiti are thoroughly checked, and so that you stop the proliferation of guns into Haiti. These are very expensive weapons, and so the average Haitian can't even afford to eat, as we were talking about earlier, and so they definitely don't have the resources to buy guns. So this is something that has been going on for a while. I mean, all of this didn't happen overnight, you know, Brian. This has been percolating, and we've been talking about this and raising the alarms that, hey, this cannot go on like that. But then the world has its own problem, and Haitians have been out to lunch, if you will, the leadership, and not really caring and leading the country where it needs to be. We often tend to point to the prime minister, the president, whoever is the leader as the problem, when the fact of the matter is this problem, all of us Haitians, including the diaspora, we play a role in being where we are today. Because there's been a lot of missed opportunities, a lot of wrong turns, taking the wrong decisions almost every time. And so here we are today, where the country, I am deeply worried about its future, immediate and long term, because we have run out of ideas inside of the country, and they need help. But the way they're going about it, it's not going to bring the kind of help that is necessary to really, first of all, pacify the gangs and restore order and commerce so that, you know, life can return.
If the guns are coming from Miami, and if Governor DeSantis of Florida, as we mentioned in the intro, is rejecting the arrival of desperate asylum seekers from this desperate situation in Haiti, is there more that he could do to stop the export of guns from his state, illegal export at that?
Absolutely. You know, he has a right to inspect these ships who are heading to Haiti. I mean, as you see now, the Supreme Court is weighing in whether Texas or any other state can involve themselves in immigration affairs, deporting people back to a place they're not even from, in Mexico. So if you were able, some of these Republican governors are thinking about this draconian measures. So this is something that, you know, he will endear himself to his constituents in South Florida who are really at their wit's end watching this flow of weapons into the Haiti unchecked. Perhaps he should think about that. That's a good idea for him. Maybe I hope maybe he's listening, or one of his aides is listening, that probably the best way to use his resources is try to inspect these cargo that's heading down to Haiti.
He doesn't want people crossing borders into this country, what he calls illegally. How about guns leaving these borders from his state illegally? Well, maybe somebody will pick that up down there. Here are two opposing texts from listeners on the deep history that you were giving earlier in the segment. One listener writes, "Thank you. The only way the Haitian issue can be resolved is to go back to 1804 and for France to repay the $500 million that Haiti paid in reparations." Another one writes, "I'm sorry, blaming current problems on actions in 1804 is very lame. Other countries emerging much later from colonialism have managed much better." What would you say to either of those, or the fact that they came in right after another?
Well, I think it's both are valid, and to be quite honest, the Haitian Times, once again, we've been talking about that as well. Like, hey, listen, we do understand what happened in 1804. It's real. It's true. But now, how can we stop the cycle? How can we reverse the wrong that was done to Haiti? So the two are right. There's no contradiction here. It's just that this is the challenge, I think, of the Haitian Americans, just like the Irish Americans, the Italian Americans were able to influence and help turn these countries around. I mean, as you know very well, New York City, New York State, was Italian, Jew, and Irish, because these countries were troubled, not to the extent of Haiti, but deeply troubled enough that they were sending immigrants over here in large numbers. And these diaspora were able to turn around their homeland, and hopefully we Haitian Americans can follow these playbook and learn from what happened, how it was done, and help change the narrative of Haiti, because we have the wherewithal, the education, the means. Now all we need is to start organizing ourselves and then realize that the remittances that we send home just simply is another form of welfare and foreign aid to Haiti. It's not doing anything to develop the country. So I think the second comments are as valid as the first one. There's no contradiction here, as far as I'm concerned, because both are true.
Gail in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Gary Pierre-Pierre, editor and publisher of the Haitian Times. Hi, Gail.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a friend who's Haitian American, excuse me, living in Haiti. And, you know, since the gang issue broke out, we've been texting. So I texted him that, you know, NPR's story and encouraged him to call in. He said there's been a lot of press reaching out to him, but he's not able to respond because it's dangerous being there and they don't want to be targeted, and that there's a great number of American Haitians waiting to be evacuated. He's been waiting since this began. He said he's on standby today. So I thought that was, you know, very moving and wanted to share that.
Thank you. Gary, talk to Gail.
Gail, I'm sorry about your friends. I have personally friends as well who are stranded in Haiti. It's very difficult right now because the airport is closed. The roads are dangerous. The people have been taken out by helicopter, and that's very expensive. Well, I've heard up to $8,000 for a helicopter to take you next door to the Dominican Republic and then out to the United States. It's a very difficult situation. It's scary. It's dangerous. And so we've been trying to get friends and families out the last month or so, you know, encouraging them to leave. But a lot of them, they cannot leave because they have property. If they were to leave, would be looted and pillaged. And so they just stay there. But now they're stuck and unable to find a way out. This is a really disturbing situation we're describing. This is a war zone, not even a war, frankly. This is a massacre zone because there's nobody else shooting back. There are a few people who are now trying to stand up and shoot back. But that's very, again, in itself, very dangerous because these people are heavily armed, these so-called gangs. And we've been reporting on the situation, trying to find ways to guide people out. But right now, there's no way out unless you have a lot of money or unless the U.S. Sends in helicopters and Marines to rescue embassy officials and other officials working for the American government in Haiti right now. That's just about it. This is the Haitians in Haiti are left to fend for themselves with nothing.
Gail, thank you for your call. Gary and everybody, we're getting a call, it looks like, from inside Haiti. And so here is Maisalise calling from Haiti. Hello, Maisalise. Thank you for listening. You're on WNYC.
Thank you so much. My name is Rudel Maisalise. I'm a professor of political sciences, and I'm calling you from Haiti right now because I always like to listen to your show. I know you. I live in New York for a while, and after a while, I'm in Haiti. And since you are talking about Haiti, it's a real pleasure for me to share my comments about the current situation in Haiti. That's why I'm calling you.
And I'm honored that you continue to listen to us, that you make that choice. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes. I think that there is something that is very important that is happening right now in Haiti. This is the strength, the energy of the Haitian people. As you know, there is no international communication, there is no planes, no boats, there is no port in the country. This is the people are selling foods for Haitian elite who destroy the country. We have no supermarket. All markets are closed. Only we have informal trade in the country. This is I want your listeners to know that Haitian people is a strong people, is very strong because they sustain the life of the country right now, because in the capital, as I told you, there is no market, there is no international plane, and that they sell the food. There is no relation, no communication with Dominican Republic. Generally, we import our food from Dominican Republic. This is the Haitian people that try to sustain the elite, the political elite, the economic elite that destroy the country. And this current crisis is explained by the fact that the elite, the political elite, the economic elite destroy the country. They take away all the money. They leave the people alone. That's the reason why you can see in the popular areas, we have gang violence. They control the popular areas for that the political elite can win the election. There is an important connection between the gang violence and election in Haiti. The politicians want to control the popular areas. That's why they distribute arms to gangs in the popular areas. This is a reality. And right now, it seems to me, they don't control those people who have gangs, who have arms in the popular areas. There is a disconnection between the gangs and some politicians that have armed them to do violence. But what I would like to tell you is the fact that right now, the country is isolated, and only the Haitian people, the peasant, the common people, sustain their life in Port-au-Prince with their food, with the informal trade. This is very important. This is mm-hmm. a people of resistance. This is very important for you. Because generally, historically, the Haitian elite, the political and economic elite, have all the money. They take all the richness of the country. This is we have this violence because there is a great gap of inequality in the country. Right now, the popular people react against the elite, and they also try to destroy the common people. But the real reason of the Haitian of this violence is the fact that there is a lack of distribution of social justice in the country. The real
Ms. Elise, let me ask you a follow-up question, and I certainly hear what you're saying about massive inequality and hoarding of resources by the elite being a root cause here.
Yes.
What, in your opinion, should the United States do, if anything? I know some people say U.S. intervention over time, even when well-intentioned, has often done more harm than good. But not everybody feels that way. What would you like to see the United States do?
Yeah, very good question. It is very difficult to answer this question because over the past, the U.S. intervention has been negative for the country. As you know, since 1915, there was the first U.S. intervention in the country, and after there has been many U.S. interventions. But right now, the people cannot sustain. It seems to me there's a large amount of the population that think that we need international intervention because the people cannot sustain. This is what they are. The society is divided into two blocks. A block, a minority that rejects the idea of international intervention. A majority requires this intervention because they think that we cannot sustain. The police, the national police, can do nothing, and the army can do nothing. But what we should do in the next time is to have an army, a national army. You know, as you know, in 1994, the Haitian army has been destroyed. It was not reconstructed. But if we would like to help Haiti, first of all, I think that a large majority requires international intervention, because they cannot do nothing. Police can do nothing. As you can see in TV, mm-hmm. gangs rob in banks, destroy, burn houses, burn banks, burn anything in the country. But there is a large majority that say that if you don't have this intervention, you can do nothing. But on the other side, I think that it would be a paracetamol answer. But we need the creation of the Haitian army in the future in order to issue to defend the country.
Right. Very interesting. And I'm going to leave it there and talk to Gary Pierre about your call. Ms. Elise, I really, really appreciate you calling us from Haiti today with your perspective as a political science professor and as a human being. Thank you. Good luck to you and everyone you know there. Gary, such an interesting call. And at the end of it, well, you can jump in anywhere you want, but I was interested as one, you know, one point from his call at the end there when he talks about the need to recreate a Haitian army.
Well, yeah, that's a popular. Well, let me just give the listeners some context as to what the caller was talking about. When Aristide returned from to power in Haiti with the 20,000 American soldiers accompanying him, he disbanded the army because the army had just led the coup d'etat that ousted him. And so it created a police force. And so ever since then, there's been a discussion about that Haiti should restore its army. The argument against that is that it doesn't have the resources, and the army was really an instrument for the elite and the politicians. to foment dissent in the country, right? Coup d'etat mm-hmm. and whatnot. It sounds very familiar to today, right? Let's say the gangs and the army. So what happened is the police were very politicized. All the president, prime minister undermined the police force's power. And so it became sort of like toothless. And so one of the things that I want to follow up on what the caller said, which was really, you know, laying out the challenges for intervention or against intervention, I don't think it's a binary choice. I think what the United States can do and should do is really support the Haitian police, provide the police with this, with the material, the intelligence apparatus, and everything else it needs to fight the gangs. I believe that they can fight the gangs, but they cannot do it by themselves. What will happen if that happens? You will go a long way to establish respect for the police in the eyes of the people in, of Haiti, and mm-hmm. we'll be able to reconstruct the country, you know, with that. That's a good first step to empower the police and the justice system and all of that. I think this is something, you know, the U.S. can do right now.
Here's another caller, Gassner in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hello, Gassner.
Hello, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
Okay. What I would like to say is that there is no way anything is going to happen there as long as outsiders, the United States, France, Canada, keep dictating the terms of what should be done in Haiti. They had a meeting in Jamaica a couple of weeks ago. There was no Haitian delegation there. They basically tell them, this is what we want you to do. This is the way we want you to do it. What about the Haitian input in all of this? The other thing is, we want their intention to be right, to invest in the country, not dictating who should be in power and how they should govern. We want investment. We do not want aid. Aid is not going to get Haiti anywhere.
What's investment, the difference between investment and aid, the way you mean it?
Aid is telling people, this is 10 million, this is 100 million for food, for this, for medicine, and for that. Investment is helping people to sustain themselves by creating jobs. Why do we have to rely on the Dominican Republic for everything when we have more fertile soil than the Dominican Republic? It is just about investment. Those multinationals, they want to invest in the Dominican Republic, but not in Haiti. And the reason they want to do that are the reason that your invitee has been telling you at first. Back to colonialism. They want us to stay under their grip. This is what has to stop. If they want to help us, let us make the decision and they can support us, but not telling us what we should do every single time.
Gassner, thank you very much. Gary, your comments.
Well, I mean, Gassner makes very valid points, but I would turn it back to him and say, okay, what are you willing to do? How engaged are you in turning the things around? Because, you know, I tell people, I'm an American of Haitian ancestry. I'm an American citizen. I do have some leverage to petition my government. And I think Haitian Americans have to start thinking that way and being more active, not just passive, because we've been very passive about the situation in Haiti, because as Gaston said, he says, well, it's a fait accompli. The French and the Americans, they'll do whatever. But we are part of the Americans, and what can we do? You know, Schumer has one of the largest, Senator Chuck Schumer has one of the largest Haitian constituents in the country. So what kind of dialogue are we having with him? Are we, you know, pushing him to make speeches like he made about Israel the other day? I mean, that was a courageous, you know, stand on his part. But, you know, do we have someone? Are we
operating at that level. And until we start doing that, they will impose things that's not Haiti's best interest. And by the way, France has not been much of a player in Haiti for the last 25 years or so. It has left. They have an embassy, of course, but there's not any French influence whatsoever. With the advent of the Haitian diaspora, the U.S. has become the main international partner. Canada, somewhat, but France, we could take it out of the equation for the time being. It has no influence or no resources to commit to Haiti right now.
And in fact, here's a listener question. Why was Kenya considering sending troops? Does Kenya have any connection to Haiti?
Well, these things happen. It's a geopolitical decision that the Pentagon and the State Department make. If people remember, last time there was a UN intervention, it was led by Brazil and Chile. At the time, these countries had regional aspirations to be leaders. Okay, so in East Africa, Kenya has similar aspirations. So the Defense Department and the State Department enlisted them, and they are interested in doing it. But I think the whole idea is I don't think we even need foreign troops, really. You need to support the Haitian National Police. The money that they're going to give to Kenya, why don't you hire some more police, get some advisors to help them deal with the situation? So I'm not a proponent of sending a foreign soldiers or police officers, because it's a bad look. And the memory of the last one is still fresh. It didn't end well for anyone. The UN, the Haitian people, Haiti in general. And so we cannot really go back to failed tactics. It didn't work. And I don't think it's going to work this time. It will pacify them. They'll lay low and wait until you leave, because, you know, these foreign forces ultimately have to leave. So let's work together with the Haitian police. There are some good and patriotic officers in the police force, and there are enough of them that if they have the proper backup, they can get the job done. And so, therefore, we don't really need a foreign troop per se to sort of like come save Haiti. Haiti has to save itself, because we've been trying to save Haiti, and it hasn't been working. Let's try, you know, this is, and to be fair, Brian, the State Department has been talking about that, the Haitian-led solution. That's what the I don't know if it's just like empty words, but that's mm-hmm. what the policy appears to be. I mean, they held several meetings 2 years ago after the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse to come up with a solution. Again, the diaspora is holding Zoom meetings. That comes to nothing, and we haven't been able to propose something constructive to the State Department as to what we think should happen. And they've been asking that. And I'll criticize the State Department when it needs to be criticized, but in this case, I cannot say they haven't been at least talking that talk and then making sure that we are involved. I've been in briefings with the State Department when they try to look. I mean, I'm still a journalist. I try to maintain my journalistic ethics and integrity and not trying to be a player in this, because I want to keep a certain distance mm-hmm. so that I be able to see the big picture and not be embroiled into this whole thing. But the State Department is looking for solutions from Haitian diaspora, and we're still not providing them with some guidance.
Could part of the solution come from the gang leaders themselves? I've read that the head of this current gang uprising, Jimmy Cherizier, also known as Barbecue, maybe people have heard that nickname, he's calling this uprising an armed revolution, stepping into a more political role by, from what I've read, apologizing for the violence perpetrated on Haitian civilians.
Well, yeah, I mean, this thing has gotten complicated, because right now, any solution, you have to, it's not directly, but somehow include them in the mix, because as the caller earlier said, the way people have been marginalized, and I mentioned it, it is a problem we need to address. I mean, here's the thing, Brian. The gang problem is the least of our problem. Is rebuilding the society is a bigger challenge, because you can't militarily deal with the gangs.
I don't know how hardened they are because they've never been shot back at. They've never had, you know, heavy weapons shot back at them. And what do they do? We don't know. I'm not sure they know what to do. And so that can be taken care of. I'm sure you have some military experts listening who will agree that, yeah, they can deal with the gangs. The problem is the child soldiers, the teenagers who are the rank and file of these gangs, army. And it's almost similar to Liberia and Sierra Leone when you had the child soldier, where you have to deal with that and build a society. Because right now, there are very few people left in Haiti who are middle class or professionals or that could help. Everybody would have to come back. 90% of the people that you need to build a society, they're out of Haiti right now.
So last question. Do you need more buy-in from the American public generally? There's a lot of attention to other parts of the world that are in crisis. Obviously, there's, you know, a lot of American feeling of connection to the Israel-Gaza situation from various populations in this country and for various historical and religious and all kinds of reasons. Haiti, there is a big Haitian diaspora in the New York area, absolutely, in the Miami area, a little bit elsewhere. But I actually want to play a clip of Joe Biden from when he was in the Senate in 1994 during the crisis after Prime Minister Aristide had been deposed in a coup. This is from a PBS interview with Charlie Rose on PBS in 94. And he's not saying this is his own opinion, but this is how he's characterizing American attitudes or how much Americans care. Listen.
If Haiti, a god-awful thing to say, if Haiti just quietly sunk into the Caribbean or rose up 300 feet, it wouldn't matter a whole lot.
So if that is still the case, how do you get Americans to care enough even while you're debating whether American intervention is helpful or harmful?
Well, I think the first American that needs to say something are the Haitian Americans. I think we have to do a job to mobilize our neighbors, friends, and acquaintances about Haiti. That's one of the reasons, Brian, why I left mainstream journalism, the New York Times, to do the Haitian Times. I wanted to provide us with a voice, at least a reason, that we could look at it, the situation, from an American point of view, as Haitian American, and to provide the Haitian diaspora a point of view about what, you know, what's happening in Haiti. And because we're the ones with everything to lose. You know, I was born in Haiti. I left Haiti. I was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And Haiti is part of me. It will always remain. And my children are still connected to Haiti. And this is the continuation. And this is a calling, a challenge to my fellow Haitian Americans. You know, you cannot sit and do nothing. We need to organize because the country is in danger. And this time it's serious. And I've never said that. I could always have an explanation for why this situation is happening. This is society breaking down. So this is not something that you can come up with some sort of policy that's mm-hmm. going to fix it. We need to rebuild this nation. 1804 all over again.
Thank you, Gary, for illuminating our listeners about what's going on in Haiti. The Haitian Times publishes in New York, largely for the diaspora. And Gary Pierre is the editor and publisher. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.